Okay, good evening, everybody. It is Pesach is in the air, although it's still, I know, over a week before. But when trying to figure out when would be a decent time to give this drasha, if not for on Shabbos, the week before Pesach was sort of, really, you're going to give it the week before Pesach? Everybody's busy, so you may as well. So we'll do it right before leading into Shabbos. As most of these Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Shuva drushas are, this is a question that I've been wondering about for a long time, sort of led me on the road here. We were having discussions with Norman Garfield about this on the way home, on our walks home from shul sometimes. And that is, why is it that a communist regime ends up being so anti-religious? Why does that have to be? Why is it, I guess, sort of had an interest in the Jews, the history of Russian Jewry and the Free Russian Jewry movement. Why is it that it became such a requirement that the government had to push back on religion in the way that they did, making it so difficult to be a Jew in Russia? Why do those not work together? It seems like it could work together, right? The idea of communism, the idea of a communist regime, is that everybody should be able to provide for everybody else. So, okay, whether we agree with that as an economic theory, why is that so anathema to a religious theory, and particularly to Yiddishkeit in particular? So that then led to me. So I figured we'd be able to connect that to the idea of slavery. I didn't realize at the time when I thought of this question that the specific connection is made, as we'll see, by Rav Soloveitchik. He doesn't talk much about communism in his writings, but he does make this point in particular. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. The title of this year is Why the Need to Be Slaves. And it's not just the story of the Jewish people wasn't, well, they happened to be slaves, and Hashem happened to, and that's where Hashem, so to speak, found us. And we were taken out. Or like other things in Jewish history, depending on how happenstance it had to be. You know, this was a situation they found themselves in, and this is the way that things worked out in order to get them out of that situation. The idea of being slaves was a requirement seemingly from the very beginning, from the very beginning discussions that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem had with Avraham about the future that he would have and the leadership role that he would have in terms of being the leader of the Jewish people. So from the very beginning, Hashem tells him, you know, there's going to be this period where you're going to be slaves, that you're going to have to be slaves as part of the bris ben habesarim. In fact, the very beginning, Vayhi Hashem Ishlavo, that source, the first source on the page, Vayhi Hashem Ishlavo v'sardema nafla al Avram, v'nei ema chasheicha gedola nofeles alav, that the sun set and a deep sleep fell upon Avram, and the great dark dread fell upon him, or darkness fell upon him, Vayomer li Avram, yado teida ki ger yezaracha ba'aretz lo lahem, v'yavdum v'inuosam arba me'il shana. You know that your descendants are going to be strangers in a land that's not yours, and they're going to be avadim for all those years. But don't worry, v'gamis ha'goya sh'yavodu dan anochi v'acharichen yitzu b'rishus gadol. He says, but don't worry, I'm going to judge that nation, and you're going to be able to come out with a lot of wealth. So it's very odd. Why is that? Almost Hashem is saying, this is going to be the starting point of being slaves. Why did that have to be the starting point of the Jewish people? What is it that sort of gives us? What is it that contributes to us as a people? And even the next pasuk, where Hashem says, I'm going to judge the nation that enslaved you, and you're going to come out very wealthy. Well, what is that about? What is the emphasis on A, the punishment of them, and B, the wealth that you're going to receive? So there is, I looked around in the Meforshim on Chumash about why is it that Hashem imposed this, so to speak, on Avram or in his descendants, that there's going to be this period of history. So the Ramban, actually, not there, but earlier on in Parshas Lech Lecha, when it has in the middle of the story of Avram going down to Mitzrayim, and he goes down... Sam, Don't distract me. These things pop up on my screen. So the so in the beginning of that story, when they're going, when Avram goes down to Mitzrayim with Sarai at that point, and Avram, of course, tells Sarai, you know, we're going to have a problem here. They're going to want to try to take you. Don't worry. Tell them that you're my sister instead of my wife, and we'll be able to get by. So the Ramban there actually says this was like a really bad thing that Avram did. V'daki Avram Avinu chit chit gadol b'shkaga she'vi ishto hatzadekes b'michshol avam lifnei pachto pen yaharguhu. That Avram did a very bad thing by putting his wife in harm's way, that and with the fear that they might kill him, because of the fear that they might kill him. Why? Vayalu liftoach b'shem sheyatzil osovias ishto vias kol ashelo. He should have put his faith in Hashem, that Hashem would have saved him. Meaning, go down there, tell the truth, say, hi, this I'm Avram, this is my wife Sarai, pleasure to meet you. And, you know, Hashem is the one who told you to go down there. Hashem will figure out a way that you're going to be okay. So vias kol ashelo, v'ki yesh b'elukim koach lazor lahatzil, Hashem has the power to be able to save you. Because he told you to leave the land, that was commanded, because of famine. Right? So Hashem told you to go down there to save you from famine. Hashem will figure out a way to save you there also. The Almaisa Hazeh, says the Ramban, Nigzar al Zaro Hagalus Be'eretz Mitzrayim Biyad Paro. And because of this, Hashem imposed the punishment of galus and of galus in the land of Mitzrayim at the hands of Paro. So the Ramban seems to be saying that this, the whole idea of being a slave in Egypt, was as punishment to Avram for this. So the as punishment for Avram for this activity. So the Maharal has an entire sefer on Gvuras Hashem. In fact, I'll give a podcast hint. There is a podcast called Svarim Chatter out there, where people who write books about things get to be interviewed by this author. So often about the book, but often just about the subject matter. So we actually interviewed Rabbi Hartman, who you've seen those blue Maharals, which is now up to like 40 volumes or something like that. So he interviews him, and it's mostly about the Maharal. So I listened recently to a whole talk about the Maharal. You could catch it on the podcast, Svarim Chatter podcast. But anyways, so the Maharal has an entire sefer. I think his largest sefer is actually on the Chag of Pesach and the Agadah Shel Pesach. It's called Gevuras Hashem. So in Gevuras Hashem, the Maharal picks up on this issue and says the Ramban is very difficult. We don't see any other hint to this idea of the Ramban, that he's suggesting that this happens, that this was the punishment, and he says it's very difficult to understand. And the truth is, says the Maharal, the truth is the Gemara itself picks up on this question. The Maharal, although it's interesting, the Gemara is asking it in the framework also of Avraham, right? The Gemara asks, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Elazar, and it is a bit of a problem. The Ramban seems to argue on the Gemara, but that's okay. We discussed that in other contexts where the Ramban, in terms of Agadata, the Ramban took license to give additional opinions to that which is found in Chazal. But the Ramban, the Gemara says itself, in Gemesachas Nedarim, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Mifnei ma nenash Avram Avinu v'nishtabdu banav l'mitzrayim ma'atayim v'eser shanim. Why is it that Avram was punished such that his children would be enslaved in Egypt for 210 years? So, first of all, that's a second time we've seen this assumption, right? The Ramban is making this assumption, and the Gemara is making this assumption, that there seems to be some connection that Avram is being punished for this, that the idea that B'nai Yisrael was going to be enslaved in Egypt is a punishment to Avram. Which is interesting. Why does that have to be? But the Gemara gives answers. Because Asa Angarius B'Talmidi Chacham Shemar Vayarik Es Chanichav Yulidei Beso. Okay, that he sort of made light of Talmidi Chachamim. That's a different answer. We'll talk about that another time. But Shmuel says B'Fnei Shehivriz Al Midosav Shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, because he challenged the Midos of Hashem. Shemar Bameida Ki Ershenu. Because he turned to Hashem and said, from where shall I know that you're going to inherit us? So, and Rashi makes a comment there on that Gemara, that Avram tested Hashem, right? By Avram turning to Hashem and saying, do you have any proofs? Do you have any, can you show me any evidence? How do I know that you're actually going to give us this future? So that apparently, says the Gemara, was not an appropriate thing for Avram to say, right? God tells you, I'm going to do this. So you turn to God and say, oh yeah, prove it. Right? So, or give me some kind of guarantee that that's going to come true. So that was an unfortunate thing that he said, and therefore, B'nai Yisrael ends up being slaves in Egypt for 210 years. Okay, but wait a second. So says the Maharal, why is that an appropriate punishment? What's going on? Why is it that because Avram shows a lack of emunah, B'nai Yisrael ends up being slaves? Right? Where is that connection? So the Maharal says, V'tocha, halfway down the page, Vatochal Lomar Shadas Rabbeinu Ki Hashem Yisparach Hivi Es Zera Avram Begalus, that he brought the descendants of Avram to Galus Bifnei Shelo Haya Avram Yischazik Kol Kach BiEmuna, because Avram didn't have such good emuna. Lekach Hivi Hashem Yisparach Zaro Begalus Kedei Sheyakenu BeEmuna Sheyiknu BeHamuna, so that they'd be able to acquire faith. V'yedu Koach Maisev Shu Osa LeOavav V'Gvurasav Asher Osa LeOivav, and they will know the strength that and the power of what Hashem does to their enemies, as Hashem does to Mitzrayim with the Makos, etc. And therefore, they're going to be able to be mitaking this idea of Avram. So suggests the Maharal, why is it that B'nai Yisrael is punished with being slaves? So it answers the Gemara, because Avram didn't show enough emunah. What was it about being slaves that somehow resolves this issue of a lack of emunah, a lack of faith, on behalf of Avraham? So Maharal says, because when you're slaves in Egypt, and then you're going to see that the other side is going to be punished, and you're going to see the amazing things of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that will enhance your emunah. That will be able to be an appropriate, that will be able to give B'nai Yisrael the nekuda, the amount of emunah, amount of faith necessary to then be able to grow and to become the Jewish people. Okay. It's a little challenging. Yes, Sheldon. I don't hear you. Oh, now I know I was so quiet before because my volume is off. Yes.
It seems to me you can read the Ramban as saying that Avram should have never left Israel at all. He should have relied on Hashem to support him in Eretz Israel. So the whole going down to Egypt was, according to that, would be the problem, and then it's a little. It's a little ambiguous, I admit, but I think I've seen that
people. I don't know. That's not the way the Maharal. I think the Ramban is reading it. Because the Ramban actually continues on and says that just as you caused Paro to have Negayim, so too you're going to have Negayim. Meaning there's a. This punishment specifically having to do with Egypt, and that Avram caused that punishment. Now, you know, it could be that maybe the Ramban is basing himself on a medrash, and you know, maybe others interpret it as no, the idea of just going to Egypt in the first place was the problem. But okay.
Ramban says, "Kiyam Rav Yifden Umimah." Hashem could save them from the famine also. Anyway, I don't want to waste. Just a suggestion.
Okay. All right. Either way, anyways, the Maharal rejects that, at least not necessarily that it was a chsin. By the way, this Ramban is often quoted in the idea of did Avos, are Avos seem to be perfect? So here's a clear Ramban saying that Avram sinned, right? That even something that could be interpreted as being the appropriate thing, the Ramban has no problem saying, you see that there was, that Avram did a chet. But right, the Maharal's question is Ukfar Hikshu Alav Kushios Achenekar Perusho Mikol V'Kol. You can ask so many questions of the Ramban that the pshat gets totally uprooted. Shari Echad Shenigzar Hagalos Alav Chazar Avram Kshal. Okay, and he goes and asks his questions for a page and a half until he gets to this Gemara that we quoted from. Okay, so anyway, so that is perhaps a source for the idea of slavery. The problem is that certainly doesn't answer the question that we started off with of why do we need to be slaves, right? Could have done a lot of things Hashem could have done a lot of things in order to demonstrate his power, in order to demonstrate his strength to the Jewish people, right? What is it specifically about slaves? So there are pshatim also out there that this was a way of purifying them. The Pasuk itself talks about that Hashem took us out of Egypt, the iron furnace,
And Rashi makes the comment there, who klisha mizakikim boas azav. It's the vessel that is used to purify the gold. That B'nai Yisrael was able to go through that process and be able to come out better on the other side. Okay, meaning maybe that perhaps helps us understand why it had to be a negative experience. Meaning the first experience, you could have gotten a moon in Hashem by Hashem doing amazing miracles. You didn't necessarily have to be a slave first in order to do it, right? And get a moon that way. Okay, so this pshat then tells us, well, going through hardship perhaps enhances a person. The Michtav Meliyahu develops that a little bit and suggests that every time, he says, V'chein kol pam shahayat tzorech lates efsharos letzadik yis'olos b'madrega gedola el yona ma'od, every opportunity, any time that a tzadik gets to a very high point, nizrak ha-tzadik al sevilas hashvalim hayosik ruim l'man yulman mehem es pesicho et epechisos hara b'is'ames betov admarum kitzav. That he first is often pushed down to the bottom and then is able to learn from that in order to be able to grow. That it doesn't just happen that a person grows. They sort of have to have a low point in order to then move quickly in order to get to a high point. And one of the examples that the Maharal, I put the same quote twice. But first he talks about the idea of Mitchilas of the Avodah Zarahayu, about Avram Avinu, that Avram Avinu had to come from a place of Avodah Zarah in order to be able to grow. And on the next page, which is not accidentally not here, he just talks about the experience of Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, that they had to go to a low point of Tumah, a low point of impurities, in order to sort of shoot up to get to the point of being able to get Kabbalah Satorah. Meaning, the Rav Dessler asks, why is it that why did Moshe to the Yeshiva Shomala? He could have invited all of Bnei Yisrael to the Yeshiva Shomala. We'll have a field trip. All Bnei Yisrael will walk up the mountain. And however Moshe got into Yeshiva Shalmaila, the upper yeshiva, in order to learn with Hashem, all Bnei Yisrael could have learned from Hashem. So he suggests that, well, they had to go through this learning process of being Tamei and be able to grow to the high level that they were at. Now, truly, doesn't quite, the answer and the question don't line up so well. But anyways, that's a principle that the Michtav Meliyahu suggests. I have a chavrusa, a young fellow, kind of like Gabe Allen, but not Gabe, someone else. this is Will. I've been learning with in the morning, so I mentioned that I'm learning this topic. So he said, "Oh, that reminds me of a maral that I came across recently, where it discusses that why did the idea of Hashem creating worlds before He created this world." So what was the purpose of those worlds? So the Maharal has a similar principle that in order to get to a place that a world is going to develop appropriately, you need to first have a world that is not going to develop appropriately, and sort of in order to enact a mirror image. Now, the truth is, that's not a complete thought, because I still don't really have a great answer as to why that has to be. Meaning the Rav Dessler points out this pattern, and the Maharal is developing, you know, demonstrates this pattern. Why the pattern is a reality, I don't have a great answer for, but that is that's an idea that is out there. That Bnei Yisrael, so to speak, had to shoot up from the lowliness of being avadim and getting to the high point of being able to receive the Torah. But you're still, I'm still stuck with the question of, okay, but why'd they have to be slaves? Meaning, there are other ways. Later on, they were in low points of Tuma, right? And Hashem did other things, like, I don't know, destroy the Beis HaMikdash, or have Gullus, or have some type of exile, or some other types of punishments that Bnei Yisrael have received over the years. What is it? What was the lesson that we were specifically supposed to be able to learn from slavery? So there is a concept, and we've mentioned it, I think we've mentioned it in Shul before, and that is the idea of, and that is the question that is most commonly asked about this, is that Bnei Yisrael is so, we're so celebrating our freedom, but at the same time, Hashem says, great, now you're free from Egypt, now you're going to be my slaves, right? So if we're celebrating the idea of chirus from from Mitzrayim, why is it that we should have any type of excitement to now enter into a new type of avdus, where Hashem says, now you're going to be my slaves, now you're going to be avadim for Hashem? How does that help? So the regular discussion goes along the lines of, well, originally we did not have the freedom to be able to choose. Yes, Hashem is telling us, now you could be my avadim, now you could be my slaves, but we have the ability to choose that ability to be a slave, right? That concept of being ovdei Hashem, serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu, is something that we're choosing to do, something that we're choosing to do. Now, and therefore, that allows us, and then the argument goes, that allows us to then be free of other concerns, of other worldly things. Meaning a person can, we could easily see the idea that a person could be a slave to all sorts of things in this world while having the freedom to be in that situation. A person could be a slave to their work. A person could be a slave to earning money. A person could be a slave to a computer. A person could be a slave to exercising. A person could be a slave to all. There's many different types of things, and those, you know, types of slavery, addiction, things like that, right? That a person could get themselves into. So the idea that a person is being able to be an Eved Hashem, the idea, the thought goes, is now able to save him from being slaves to any other type of desire. Right? A person has desire and they'll just go along, they'll go with the flow of their desires. The fact that we have that we have mitzvos, that we have responsibilities towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we have responsibilities towards Hashem, so that enables us to avoid all the other types of, quote, slaveries that we perhaps would be enslaved to in this world. So that's idea out there. I never quite was able to, like, but therefore what? I'm still a slave. I mean, I'm still stuck doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for me, right? I'm not able to get past that. So let's try to maybe get a little bit more development into that idea. Rav Salavitchik, there's a sefer called Noras HaRav, and I'm sorry, for some reason when I copied and pasted it, it was very difficult. It didn't come out right on the paper, which why it looks a little bit strange. Noras HaRav is somebody's transcripts of talks. I think a Rabbi Schreiber who had was in the Rav Salavitchik shirim and wrote down a lot of his thoughts, and this is essentially verbatim from Rav Salavitchik. I came across this source, and if you don't want to read more, that on the bottom comes from the source as well, that Rabbi Yitzchak Blau, who I believe lives in Efrat, is a Rabbi Yosef Blau's son, I think, pretty sure, who's a Rav he used to be Yeshiva HaMiftar. I'm not sure Yeshiva HaMiftar even exists anymore. I haven't heard about it in a while. But he wrote an article in Tradition in 2007 entitled Rabbinic Responses to Communism. Going back in time, going to what were Rabbanim saying at the time as the Russian Communist Empire was beginning to grow and develop and things like that. So he talks about what the various objections were. There were some Rabbanim who were not so upset about it. They thought it was a good idea. But already when Rav Salavitchik is talking in the late 60s, I believe this is from 1968, it already is clear that this was a very damaging thing, certainly to the Jewish people. So he's the one who makes the connection between slaves and the communist empire. So he says, there are two types of slaves, two relationships between masters and slaves. Sometimes the slave is owned by the individual, and sometimes the slave is the property of the state. I mean, you could be a slave to a person, and you could be a slave to a government. Throughout history, slaves have often been owned by individuals. For example, in ancient Greece, slaves were owned by individuals. The same was true in the United States before the Emancipation Proclamation. Slaves were the individual property of the master. One who wanted could buy a slave. I mean, that's sort of the way we think about slavery. And, you know, we often make the connection, and part of that is just the culture of the time in terms of the idea of the Emancipation Proclamation and then the civil rights movement of this century. A lot of the imagery that was used during that period was the imagery of the Jews leaving Egypt, right? Let my people go was going back to Egyptian biblical imagery of the Jews leaving Egypt, right? That was very much invoked by Martin Luther King and others. So Soloveitchik actually, and so what does that sort of make us think about? That, right, the slavery in Southern, in the Confederacy, and then the difficulties that they had later on, is similar to B'nai Israel in Egypt. But we don't see that B'nai Israel had individual masters in Egypt. In Egypt, everybody worked for the government, right? Everybody worked for Paro. In fact, you go to the end of Bereishis, you see the grounds being laid for that when Yosef demands money from people in order for them to buy grains during the years of famine. And ultimately, everybody becomes indebted to Yosef or Paro by way of Yosef. And that was the situation that they were in, that they were slaves to Paro. All right. However, there was slavery in Russia. The slaves are not owned by the individual because individual private property has been abandoned. The slaves are owned by the state. The same is true for China. This is going back a while, right? But the same is true for Nazi Germany. The concentration camps were not owned by individuals. They were property of the state. What is the then he actually goes on, Rav Soloveitchik, and says that that's the pshat in Avadim Hayinu leParo b'Mitzrayim. Right, that we were slaves to Paro in Egypt. Right? Why do we need both of those terms? Because it wasn't just in Egypt and it wasn't just to Paro. It was to Paro as the Paro of Egypt because they were slaves to the government. Right? So what is the difference then he says, what is the difference between being owned by the state or being owned by an individual? Of course, both forms of bondage are doubtlessly degrading. However, there's a distinction between a private and public bondage. At the individual level, some personal relationship between master and slave may develop. The slave may attain a position of power in the master's household. He may de facto run the household. The best example is Yosef. Yosef stayed in Potiphar's home, and in their master-slave relationship, there was confidence and there was complete trust. Meaning, yes, it's true, Yosef was technically a slave, but he worked for Potiphar, and he was able, perhaps, even to achieve some sort of satisfaction from running the affairs of Potiphar. However, if the slave is the property of the state, of the cold, merciless, cruel corporate state, then no personal relationship is imaginable. The state is a cruel master. The supervisors are as cruel on the first day as they are on the last day. No friendship, no sympathy will ever be aroused. Meaning a person is not able to feel that they're contributing anything, to feel that they're able to gain anything from the situation that they found themselves in. We'll just skip the idea on the bottom, just go to the next page, and we'll come back in a second. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota, the Gemara there has long descriptions of the challenges that B'nai Yisrael faced when they were in Egypt, but the Gemara tells us, Vayimaru eschai hem b'avodah kasha, b'chomer v'venin, that they bittered their lives with difficult work, with chomer v'venim. Right, and Rashi, Amar Rava makes the comment, Chila b'chomer l'vinim. In the beginning, it was with mortar and with building with bricks. With sofu chol avodah basda, all the work in the field, as kol avodah sam asher avdu b'hem b'farach, and all of the work which they had to do b'farach. What does it mean that they were done b'farach? What is avodah b'farach? Work in the difficult work, or right? What does that mean, or what does that tell us? So Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shayu Machlifin Melachas Anashim LeNashim, Umelachas Nashim LaNashim. That Hashem split Hashem. That not Hashem, but the Egyptians, they divided up the work of men and gave it to women, and the work of women and gave it to men. So I don't know. That doesn't sound like so bad. Right, I mean they right. So the men had to, I'm afraid of going there. Right, the women were forced to give the oil changes to the car, and the men were forced to do things that are often done by women. I don't know, something like that. Right. So what is it? What is so terrible about that? So okay, right. So it's not necessarily what they wanted to do, but that's what made life in Egypt so difficult. So probably the idea what the Gemara is trying to tell us is that they did something which was not appropriate to them, that they were not able to feel like they were having any satisfaction what they did. They didn't gain anything from the work that they were doing, right? Often the jobs that define the two sexes, right? the men's, quote-unquote, men's work versus women's work, is because that sex finds that job some sort of some fulfillment in that job, while the other one doesn't. So they were specifically placing them in positions where they were not going to be able to fulfill, to gain any fulfillment from the work that they were doing. A similar thing appears in Rashi itself, right? Rashi there comments that they built Pitom and Ramses, and Rashi makes the comment that those were cities that sort of sunk into the sand. He actually plays a, he plays at Pitom v'et Ramses. So Rashi makes the comment here, where is it? The Gemara, it's not in Rashi itself. The Gemara makes the comment that they were cities that sank into the sand, meaning they built the entire thing up, only for it to collapse right away, and there being nothing at the end for them to be able to show for their work. So what was accomplished during this, and that's what made the life there so difficult. They were not able to gain anything from that work. So we go back to page 2. Rabbi Shalom Mordechai Shvadron. So he was the Magid of Yerushalayim. Those Pesach Kron fans. So Rabbi Pesach Kron was somehow the Kron family and the Shvadron family very close, and somehow the Shvadron family stayed with the Krones for a while. The very first Magid book is the Magid Speak. I forget which was the first one. But it's not Rabbi Kron stories himself. It's actually Rabbi Kron telling stories that Rav Shalom Shvadron would tell over. So he very prominent in Yerushalayim. I'm sure Rabbi Levine has a lot of good stories about Rav Shalom Shvadron. He also has a commentary on Chumash where this comes from. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't find it inside. I was shocked when I couldn't find it anywhere online on Otzer Chacham or anything like that. But I actually sent out a thing to my rabbinic listserv. Did anybody have a copy that they could scan of this page and send it to me? And about a minute before the shiur started, I got a note from Rabbi Turchiner saying, oh, I could scan it when I get home later after my shiur. Like, sorry, too late. But anyways, I'll tell you the way he records it in his article. He raises a different argument for the significance of private property. I mean, this section talks about that many rabbanim were upset about the idea that there was no private property in a communist regime. So when everything becomes communal, no one feels personal responsibility to help those out in distress. Not only that, but anyone who wants to help has no right to take money from what has become public funds. Rav Shvadron depicts Sodom as a socialist society and sees that as the source of their refusal to give charity. Meaning we often, in the time of learning Parshas Noach, some have tried to say that the generation of Noach was a generation of unbridled capitalism, meaning it was every man for himself. That's why people were stealing from each other and things like that. And the door and the Migdal Bavel, the building of the tower, that is considered communist because everybody was working together, but there was no longer any individual value. As Midrashim described, that people would slip off and they would die right away. Somebody would be holding a rock and they would fall off. And they would to the bottom, and everybody would cry because the rock was destroyed, but not because the guy had died. And that's a description of the Migdal Bavel. But he actually points to Sodom as being this society, because he writes that all share in the kupa, and therefore is impossible for a pauper to come from elsewhere. Because if that pauper takes a penny, he is taken from communal funds. And everybody knows, as it was in Russia, when everything belonged to all, and therefore no one was allowed to give to charity. I mean, you aren't able to help out somebody who was in need because nothing was yours. And you weren't able to give anything over to another person. Rav Aaron Lopiansky actually has an article, entitled, Why Is It That... Here we go, right? Marxism, Murder of the Soul. So he has a book entitled Timepieces, where it's mostly articles, a lot of articles that he's written over the years. So he discusses this question about why is it inherently that there was a problem, that there was a conflict between communist Russia and religion. And he suggests that the idea of ownership is a very important concept in Yiddishkeit. We don't see the idea of owning things as being a negative. We see the idea of owning things as being the opportunity to do positive. The opportunity, right? Hashem gave us things in order for us to do appropriate things with them. So some of that gets into what the Rav Salavitchik Shira was discussing the other night, the idea of Adam 1, the idea of being able to conquer, the idea of being able to accomplish, the idea of being able to conquer this world with the things that you're able to gain and grow from. But the Shadron is taking that as being, if you don't own anything, you can't do chesed with those things. Right? Hashem created the world in a way that we're supposed to be able to do the appropriate things, so to speak, be the shluchim, the messengers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to distribute his goods appropriately in this world. So Shadron says, what was the problem with Sodom, where nobody was even allowed to do kindness for anybody else? Right? It always bothered me. Why is there a punishment for being kind to someone? So what Shadron suggests is that because it wasn't your right to be kind. Right? It was a zero-sum game. By you being kind and letting money go, so to speak, to an outsider, you are therefore taking away from the collective. And therefore, you have no right to do that. So we have the ability, right? We have to recognize the idea of kinyan, the idea of acquiring. And therefore, and with that idea of acquiring, we have the idea of, right, distributing, of doing the appropriate things with that money that is given to us. In fact, Rav Lopiansky quotes here at the end that Rav Itzla Panovitcher was the Rav of Panovich, and he was, you know, the early 20th century. He saw the beginning of this, and that was a time, right, when the communist spirit was brewing and everybody was excited about this, and he actually was somewhat, he understood it. He sort of saw why it might be considered a good idea for this to take hold. Everybody would be taken care of, nobody would be poor, etc. But he says it's impossible that that's really the appropriate way of running a society, because that would take an entire section of Shulchan Aruch and make it not necessary, right? And make it, he would take Choshen Mishpat and throw it out the window, right? The idea of Choshen Mishpat is based on the premise that we're supposed to own things, and we're supposed to have relationships with other people in order for us to be able to deal in that area of Choshen Mishpat, of working together, and also in the idea of tzedakah. Rabbi Lopiansky also wrote a very important sefer entitled, I'm looking for it over there, A Ben Torah's Guide to Life. Do I have it? Did I bring it? Oh, there it is. There you go. Orchos Chaim, Ben Torah for Life. That's the name of it. So the first section is discussing with the idea being that how does a person who's been in yeshiva for many years, not necessarily college, right? Someone who's been in yeshiva for many years, and now they're going out to get a job someplace. So not talking about how do they go out to get the job. That's not his area of discussion. I mean, how do you transition from being the yeshiva guy to being a person in the working world? So the first section he deals with is, how do you know that you're supposed to make that transition? Meaning, how do you know if you're maybe cut out to actually be, you know, in learning for the rest of your life versus knowing that you should go out into the rest of the world? And then, and the values in going out into the rest of the world and how one can contribute in general to society. But the first section after that is entering the world of kinyan, entering the world of ownership, entering the world of being a person who now has entities and what one gains from that. So he talks about the idea of nemanus, the idea of being trustworthy. I mean, now you're entering into an area of halacha where you have to be trusted, and you have to present the ability to be trusted. And then he talks about how you've been given the responsibility now to distribute your assets in a good and appropriate way. So when we talk about Egypt being the idea of slavery in Egypt, perhaps, right, the idea of and what we gain from that, I mean, why is it B'nai Yisrael specifically, not just that they had to see Hashem do miracles, and not just that they had to see Hashem's fairness and that he judged Paro appropriately, right? And not just that they themselves were the ones that had to suffer, but specifically that there was something that they gained through the suffering of being slaves. So the most common answer to that as well, because plenty of times in the Torah it says you should be kind to this person, that person, right? Be, you know, take care of this thing because you were once slaves in Egypt. But perhaps at the source of that is you were once slaves in Egypt and had nothing. Now you have left and you have the ability to acquire things and make sure you do appropriate things with that which you acquire. And that perhaps is a message of being slaves before being able to be able to get the Torah, because that's an integral part of the Torah. It's an integral part of our role in this world, not just to raise ourselves spiritually, but raise ourselves materially, meaning take those the materials that we're able to gain and elevate them in a spiritual fashion. That concept cannot exist in a world where you don't actually have ownership of things. Right? That is perhaps a suggestion, if not exactly what Rav Lopiansky said, perhaps influenced by what Rav Lopiansky said. So, good so far. Questions, comments, observations? I just have one more thought to throw out there. And that is also an idea I heard from Rav Lopiansky on a different shir that I was listening to. He has, by the way, his own app. You can listen to his stuff while, I don't know, running and things like that. So so he has the following thought, that at the very end, and here he is where he discusses the idea of Kili B'nai Yisrael Avadim, that don't be slaves to them because you're going to be slaves to me. Would you raise the question before of, well, okay, but now I'm stuck being a slave to someone. So how does that help me? Why is that considered to be a positive thing in my development? So he points to a pasuk, the very last pasuk in Az Yashir. And we actually, in the Monday night Hilchos Sefer Torah shir, came across this pasuk for a reason. Let's see if anybody remembers. Why this pasuk played a role. So the pasuk at the very end of Az Yashir says, "Tivyemo v'sitaemo v'har nachalascha." Right, you'll bring and implant them in the mountain of your heritage. Machon l'shiftecha pa'alta Hashem. Right, the foundation of your dwelling place that Hashem has made. Mikdash Adonai konenu yadecha. My Lord, your hands have established. So you're going to now take us and build us this sanctuary which was made by Hashem, which Hashem has established. So what is that talking about? So first, we quoted this a couple weeks ago in the Sefer Torah shir, because this pasuk is talked about as in the book Inside Stam, right? He has the story of the Munkacher Rebbe, where the Munkacher Rebbe had a Sefer Torah that he thought was perfect, and he always asked any time a person came to town and knew how to check Sefer Torah, he'd have him check it, and it always come out fine, until somebody came, and he checked it, and he said right away, oh, there's a problem with Sefer Torah's puzzle. And the Munkacher Rebbe, this is the previous Munkacher of the Darkei Tshuva. Darkei Tshuva says, how could it possibly be? Everybody checked it. Where's the mistake? And he says, look in Sefer Shmos. Come on. He says, it's in Az Yashir. And he said, he looked through Az Yashir, he couldn't find the mistake. And he said, it's in the last pasuk of Az Yashir. And he looks at it again, and he still can't find the mistake. So he says, look again, and compare it to a chumash, because it says, L'shiftecha pa'alta Hashem, yudkei vavkei, mikdash Hashem Adonai, aleph dalet nun yud, kunenu yadecha. And apparently in the Darkei Tshuva's Torah, it was switched. Right? L'shiftecha pa'alta aleph dalet nun yud, mikdash Hashem yud kei vav kei. Oh. Yes, Mark. We'll do it. We'll try to do it before that. So what's going on in that So what's going on in that? What is that? That's the way we left it in the halacha shir. I mean, that's why the halacha shir is puzzle, and that's why you should check your Sifrei Torah by a computer, because a computer will check, will find that error in a second, while a human checker won't find it. But what's going on? Why does the pasuk change the name, right? What is that change? And what's the description going on in that pasuk, right? So that pasuk is a description of Bnei Yisrael coming to Eretz Yisrael, building the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash is the place where Hashem will be closest to Bnei Yisrael. We will most be able to identify Hashem in this world. How is Hashem supposed to be identified in this world? So from our perspective, the Gemara tells us that Avram was the first to call Hashem Aleph Dal Nun Yud. There's a bit of a problem with that, but Hashem is referred to that way earlier. But from our perspective, Hashem is our Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adonai. Now, Yud Kei Vav Kei is also used to spell out Adonai, but we're not able to recognize Hashem in the Yud Kei Vav Kei mode. Right? So, says the Maharal in this section here, the Maharal in the Sefer Gur Aryeh, so the Gur Aryeh is his commentary on Rashi, right? He explains that this is the place where the Mikdash Shalmata meets the Mikdash Shalmala, the bottom Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, is going to beat the upper Beis HaMikdash. And it's in that very spot, in that very context, that we would then be able to feel our closest towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Hashem has something within us. We have our neshama that is contained within us, and that's what enables us to feel a closeness with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, the feeling of goodness, the feeling of appropriate, of satisfaction, that's really the word, the satisfaction that we get when we are doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, we're being Ovdei Hashem, that's the feeling of us corresponding, of us making our neshamas correspond to, when we align our will with Hashem's will, that's when we feel the most satisfaction. So when we say that we're being Ovdei Hashem, so Ovdei Hashem is really enabling us to be able to live our own, to live to our highest potential, to live to our highest ideals, to be able to feel the most connected with that which we are hoping to be able to accomplish in this world. So the answer, why does it help that you're being an Eved to Hashem, right? Why is that better than being an Eved to Paro? Because being an Eved to Hashem is really being an Eved to what we're really being designed on this world to do. And the fact that that Avdus, that servitude, so to speak, enables us to push away all other types of enslavements, right, is because that's really ultimately what we're attempting to able to accomplish in this world, and ultimately that's also what will give us the most satisfaction. So again, why did Hashem make us slaves in Egypt? So specifically, why were we slaves in Egypt? Perhaps to teach us the idea of kinyan, the idea of being able to acquire things. We're still going to continue to be Ovdei Hashem. Yeah, but Ovdei Hashem, being real servants of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is going to enable us to be able to be to take those acquisitions, to take those kinyanim that we're able to do, those material gains that we're able to make, and be able to direct that towards serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and ultimately being able to give us ultimate satisfaction in this world, and be able to get us into Olam Haba as well. So, anyway, those are thoughts heading into Pesach of this year. And any questions, comments, observations, you could take them.